and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, we're kicking off a three-part series of gardening in Alaska with a variety of presentations from the Alaska Botanical Garden 5th Annual Spring Garden Conference. Recorded at the UAA-APU Consortium Library on March 12th, hear from local gardening experts Verna Pratt, Julie Riley, and Jeff Lowenfels in the weeks to come on Addressing Alaskans. This week, Danny Constantine, State of Alaska Executive Director of the USDA's Farm Service Agency, presents How to Strengthen Alaska's Local Food Systems.
Howdy.
Hi.
Hi. How's everybody doing? Happy spring. This is a spring garden conference, isn't it? It feels like spring today. It feels like, what are we doing indoors today? What a beautiful day. My name is Danny Constantine. My title is, I'm the State Executive Director for the USDA's Farm Service Agency, one of the many USDA federal agencies that works on farm and growing and agriculture and rural communities all around the country. And I can tell you a little bit about the agency, but thought I'd tell you a little bit about myself. Here's what I want to do today. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I thought I'd talk a little bit about what I think of when I think of a food system. What is a food system? So sort of talk about that a little bit. And then what I was hoping we'd do is kind of get some of your ideas about what is Alaska's food system? What is our food system? What does that mean? What does it look like now? And what it could look like if we were to have a stronger regional food system. What would that look like? If we could dream and say, we want a strong regional food system, what does that mean? And what would that mean to you? Do you have any ideas of what it might look like? And then we could also talk about, okay, if that's what we think it could look, here's what it looks like now, here's what we think it could look like, how do we get there? How do we get from where we are today to where we think it could be? That's what I wanted to do in the hour that we have here. Sound good? Well, I mean, just talk about it. I don't mean we're going to solve all the problems of the world here today, but maybe we will. Maybe we will. That's why I'm glad. That's the kind of attitude I like. Maybe we will. Okay, so that's what I thought we would do. Let's see. I'll start by talking a little bit about what I do. I'm the state director, and so I talk to people all around the state who are in the business of growing things. Talk to farmers, growers, ranchers, backyard gardeners, greenhouse operators, all around the state. And I end up traveling quite a bit from Kodiak, southeast, Kenai, the Fairbanks, Tanana Valley, Delta. We actually have an office in Delta where there's a significant amount of Alaska's production occurs in that we grow some very large farms in Delta. So I travel around a lot. I go to a lot of our small rural communities, and it's interesting. I hear, particularly in the rural communities, over the last couple of years, you know, we've heard a lot about the high cost of energy and what it means to have $8 or $9 a gallon diesel, and what the impacts of that is, how that impacts local communities. And it's funny, recently I've been hearing more and more people, whether it's in the farm community or just in rural communities, talk about food and talk about how isolated they feel and how vulnerable they feel about their food, where they get their food, and starting to like raise awareness about where their food comes from, and thinking about what that means, and what that means to their communities, what that means to their families, how important food is. I mean, we can't live without it. So, but I think we've gotten used to just kind of assuming it's there, and we just get it, and we don't really think about it. But I think around Alaska, there's a lot more awareness now that I'm hearing. And I don't know if you were, do you hear that too? I mean, people are starting to talk about it more, about where do we get our food? So it's been interesting to hear that. And so I hear that here. And then I also hear it from Washington, D.C., where my bosses are in Washington, D.C. And, you know, Michelle Obama, the first lady, has torn up a part of the South Lawn in the White House and planted a kitchen garden in the White House. Chef is involved, and they eat a lot of their food. Well, why are they doing that? They're doing that because they want to provide some leadership to show the rest of the country that we can do that. We can do that right here at the White House. You can do it in your home, in your backyard, and maybe by them doing it, maybe more and more people will. So Michelle Obama planted a kitchen garden, and then my boss, the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, he did the same thing, and he tore out a parking lot there in Washington, and he planted a garden. So now, right in front of the Agriculture Department on the Mall, where there used to be a parking lot, there's now what he calls the People's Garden. Within my department, the Secretary of Agriculture and the Deputy Secretary is a very interesting woman, Kathleen Merrigan. She's been in the local food and organic food business for a long time. She's the deputy. So, and she actually has started an initiative within the Department of Agriculture called Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food. I don't know if anyone's heard about that. Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food is a way that we're trying to connect consumers with the farmers. Get the, like we're saying, that connection seems to have been broken. We don't know where our food comes from, really. Our kids don't really know where their food comes from. Can we bring that connection back together? So it's an interesting initiative because it's kind of nebulous. Well, how do we do that? How do we bring that connection? But what Kathleen says is part of what we need to do is just have conversations kind of like we're having here today. Have the conversation, and through that conversation, we may get some ideas about how to do that in our own community. It might be different in different communities, but can we at the high, you know, federal level encourage these conversations in our local community? So in a sense, that's what I'm trying to do here today. This is part of Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food, because we're having a conversation about where our food comes from and what we can do to strengthen our food systems. I was just going to say about Big Ag. I get the sense within my department that there's a lot of interest in local food systems, how we can strengthen them, whether it's organic or not. There's a lot of support for smaller farms and smaller farmers. At the same time, yeah, Big Ag is, of course, still there. And I think we're kind of doing it all. You know, I don't think we're doing, at USDA, I don't think we're going to do all, going to just say, well, everyone should do organic farming or everyone should do Big Ag. We're kind of saying we're going to have, all these things have a role to play. When you think about what America does with producing food, you know, actually right now in the economy, the agricultural sector is one of the brightest spots. America is producing a lot of food. Price of farmland is up. We're exporting a lot of food to other countries. This is good for our economy. The agricultural part of our economy is creating jobs.
It's the lack of disclosure. You can look for something that's labeled organic. You can look for something that's labeled naturally grown. But if the even big ag farms, if they would disclose their growing methods so people could make an informed choice.
Right. And I hear what you're saying. As a consumer, as an aware consumer, you want to know what you're putting in your mouth and where it comes from and how it's been grown. Yeah, and I think there's a lot more of that.
It's beyond growing, too. I think a lot of the interest in local production and know your farmer has to do with the commoditizing of food. You know, the fact that food is referred to now as a product more than food. And so it's the processing and the changing of food to make it more marketable and greater shelf life. I think that's why you see so many people who really want to see food in its natural state again. We've forgotten what it looks like. You know, right. The boneless chicken ranch cartoon comes to mind, you know. Right. Kids who've never seen bones in a chicken, you know.
Right. Because we're concerned about what happens to it in that...
In that interim period there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
When I was in Hawaii, I got introduced to the idea of agritourism.
Uh-huh. Agritourism.
Where you would actually go to different farms and they would have, you know, products of, you know, whatever crop it was that they grew. And it was just a fascinating concept of being able to go from farm to farm to farm to farm. And they each produce either similar or different things. They each kind of had their own little niche.
Agritourism, I agree with you, it's a fascinating sort of new area. And I think it's fascinating for two reasons. One is, it goes to what we were saying about know your farmer, know your food. This is a way that someone can actually go to a farm and see the chicken actually runs around with two legs. Yeah, it's not just a chicken nugget. Yeah, so agritourism plays a role in educating consumers, the public, about where our food comes from, and people are fascinated about it. What a great thing to do with your kids, take them to a farm. And I think, you know, kids, families love it. It's an interesting thing to do, to go visit a farm. And maybe it's because we know so little. We've forgotten, we didn't grow up on farms, or we've been so distanced from where our food comes from that when you actually see it, it's pretty interesting. But the other reason I like agritourism is it's a opportunity for farmers or people who live in rural areas to find another source of income, because it's tough to make a living as a farmer. There's no doubt about it. This is not an easy money occupation. And farmers, people who live in rural areas, need to diversify and look around and say, well, how else can I make a living out here? And I think agritourism is another opportunity. I mean, even here in Palmer, there's a dairy farm who has been doing a little bit of that. And Princess Tours, maybe, or somebody's kind of, it's not big, but once in a while the bus will come out there and come out to the dairy farm and they'll show them their cows and they, you know, $10 a person, and the people love it. For $10 they get a great tour of the farm and they make a little bit of money on it. So yeah, I think agritourism is something to think about as a as an opportunity. It's in the back here, yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple questions, and I guess they go together. How is the Department of Agriculture trying to foster small farms, organic farms, local food, versus all the subsidies that are given to big farms and big business?
Okay. Cindy asked back here was particularly about the Department of Agriculture. I work for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And what's the Department of Agriculture doing to promote and help the development of smaller farms, whether it's organic or non-organic, but small farms, as opposed to what we do to support, whether it's subsidy programs or other programs that tend to go to larger farms. So, from a national perspective, and this is good, and this is kind of what I wanted to try to talk about a little bit about when we talk about our food systems. What role can the different players in our food system, what role can each of them play? Because at a very local level, at an individual level, all of you here can play a role in strengthening our local food system in Alaska by growing food for yourselves, or maybe taking your garden where you're growing food now and thinking about this spring, maybe making it a little bit bigger. And even though that might produce too much food for your own family, you might think, well, I might have a little extra. I could share it with my neighbor. Anyway, there are things that we can do as individuals to strengthen our food system, but then there are also things that the federal government could do at a pretty high level to strengthen our food system. So, USDA, I told you about Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food. This is, let me tell you a little bit more. This is a USDA-driven initiative, and it's to support, not only, I mentioned that one of the things about Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food is we're trying to just have more of these conversations with communities and with people about what their ideas are. So we don't have all the ideas up at the federal level. Local communities often have better ideas for their communities. So we want to try to help have these conversations. The other thing that Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food recognizes is that a local food system, and I'll talk a little bit more about what I think of what we mean by a local food system, but a local food system can benefit, a stronger local food system can benefit that region in many different ways. And I think of it as sort of three ways. One is about our health. If we can have healthier food available, I mean, think about that in Alaska. Where do we get our food? Most of it's flown in. Is this good, fresh, healthy food? Would it be better if it was grown right here and we picked it, or we knew exactly where it was coming from? So a stronger regional food system, we think, and at the USDA, who has an interest, and Michelle Obama, who has been talking about obesity and about getting healthy and healthy kids, she believes, and USDA believes, that a stronger local food system will help promote a healthier society. And everything that means when, you know, whether we're going to reduce healthcare costs and less visits to hospitals, what are the costs of obesity? What are the costs of diabetes? Things that are really a result of not a very good food system. So, a stronger regional health system can help promote a healthier communities. The other thing that stronger regional health food systems can do is help create jobs. And this administration, USDA, we're thinking a lot about how can we create jobs? How can we get this economy? The economy's doing better. It's a lot better than it was a couple of years ago. And Alaska's been fairly insulated. We're doing okay. But, you know, look at home prices, look at unemployment numbers. We're still trying to pull ourselves out of a recession, the worst recession since the 30s. So we think about that all the time. How can we, as the USDA, help create more jobs. And we believe that us through focusing on our regional food systems, we can create jobs. I mean, think about that in Alaska. Right now, from the numbers that I've seen, Alaskans spend over $2 billion a year on food. 2.2, 2.5, something like that. We spend over $2 billion. But less than 5% of the food we eat is produced in Alaska. So that, to me, that says $2 billion of Alaska's food dollars are being exported. We're sending those food dollars to Seattle or to somewhere in the lower 48 or to foreign countries. Imagine if we could keep a little bit of more of those food dollars in Alaska. Imagine if 10% more of those food dollars stayed in Alaska. That'd be $200 million that would be bouncing around our economy. And what would that mean for creating jobs, for economic development? We believe, and I think it's really true in Alaska, USDA believes this, but I think really in Alaska, if we could build a stronger food system, we'd create more jobs. This would be good for our economy. So good for our health, good for our economy. And the third thing I think about a stronger regional food system is food security. I mean, a lot of people kind of worry about what would happen. There was just an earthquake in Japan. If there was an earthquake in Alaska, which there very well could be an earthquake in Alaska, do you know how much, how long we would survive if our food shipments stopped coming in?
2 days.
Something like 3 days.
3 days. 3 days. That's right. So, but imagine if we were growing it, more of it here, producing it here, processing it here, if we had it right here in Alaska and we didn't have to depend on, you know, what if there was a volcano erupted? Didn't we have some disruptions in our air? I mean, there's all kinds of things that could happen that could disrupt our food supply and how vulnerable we are. I mean, imagine if you live in a real rural community off the road system. How do you get your food? I mean, there's a fair amount of subsistence food gathering, but you know, a lot of their food gets flown in too. What happens to them if the planes don't fly? Questions, yeah.
Well, back in the 30s and 40s, transportation was not good. Other than in the winter, the passes closed. And things had to be flown in. So you had to be sure that you got everything that you needed for a business or for your home on the last boat. Otherwise, you did it without for the whole winter. So they had bigger supplies of food. And also, they had to grow. We had to grow. Our potatoes and carrots and rutabagas and stuff, and then store them in the sand. We lived between two rivers, and so we had to do that in order to have certain things. So, but we've lost that since they've opened the passes and trucks fly, you know, go back and forth down the highway and all of that. So, my daughter went back to Massachusetts, and I said, well, what's all these people? You know, they have a storm, and the next day they're trying to get to the grocery store. Oh, she said, you can't even get a 3-pound can of coffee back here. Everybody uses a pound. So, you know, they don't stock back east then a large amount of food. But Alaskans always bought the 3-pound and sometimes the 20-pound things. So they had more food. So that was the way it was, and now it's different.
Yeah, now it's different. I saw some figures. In 1955 in Alaska, Of all the food that we ate in 1955, 55% of it was produced here, was grown or produced. So the percentage of the food that we ate in Alaska, more than half of it actually did come from Alaska back in 1955.
Right.
And you know what you're raising is how things have changed since that time. And part of what I'm hearing you say is we're starting to think about, well, why? Why have things changed so much? And I think if we look at why, maybe that would help us look for solutions about how we can go back, or not necessarily go back, but I think as Alaskans, part of it is almost a cultural sense of who we are. I think of Alaskans as being very self-reliant. That's who we are. We still have that kind of pioneer spirit. We can do things of our own. We don't like to feel like we're depending on the lower 48. We can do it ourselves. Yet, when you look at our food system, we're not. We're not doing it. So some of it's cultural, I think. Some of it, we believe that we could. And and part of that gives me a lot of kind of optimism that, yeah, okay, here's where we were in 1955, and here's where we are today. But I think as Alaskans, we can really, we can make a change. We can improve. We can strengthen our food systems. I really think we can.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans. This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Danny Constantine, State of Alaska Executive Director for the USDA's Farm Service Agency. His talk, entitled How to Strengthen Alaska's Local Food Systems, was recorded at the Alaska Botanical Garden 5th Annual Spring Garden Conference on March 12th.
So, what can the Department of Agriculture do? And what I started by saying was that we believe that local food systems, that if USDA can help strengthen a local food system, that has all these benefits to communities, health, economy, security. We believe that it's a good thing to do. It can help create jobs, particularly now. So what can we do about it? One thing that the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative is doing in Washington, D.C. Yeah, USDA is huge. USDA, by the way, is the second largest department in the federal government after the Defense Department. Defense Department's number one. Department of Agriculture is number two. It's a huge agency, huge budget, everything from food stamps to school lunches to the Forest Service is a part of USDA. So there are multiple agencies, lots of different programs. Some of it is the research that you were mentioning about. We do a lot of agricultural research. We do a lot of loans. One thing this Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative in Washington, D.C. is doing is because we want to strengthen local food systems, we are now, the Deputy Secretary, Kathleen Merrigan, she has like a weekly meeting where she brings together representatives from all these agencies, says, okay, we want to strengthen local food systems. What can you bring to the table? What do you have in the research? What do you have in the loan? What do you have in the marketing? What do you have in the production? What do you have that helps small farms? And kind of bring everybody together and see how we can all work together and take a little bit from each of these programs and work together for the goal of trying to strengthen local food systems. So there's some effort to kind of collaborate and work within the department to achieve that goal. A system, though, starts, there's so many different pieces of the food system. Starts with local production, okay? You have to grow it. Second of all, you have to, you can process it, store it, freeze it, do something with it. So there's food production, there's food processing. And the reason I'm saying this is that when you ask the question, what can USDA do to strengthen a local food system, there's a lot of different places along the way. And we've mentioned some of them. Some of them is how to, you know, where you grow it, okay? We gotta grow the food. Then we're gonna process the food. Then we're gonna distribute the food, right? Store. What about store the food? Storage is an issue. That probably goes over here. There's some waste and recycling part of it with food. And then it's sort of, what is a food system? It's all those things that have to do with food. So, where can USDA support a local food system? Okay, the growing part. Let's start with the growing. The national trend, big farms versus small farms, over the last 5 or 10 years, I think it's 5 years, the numbers of farms, large farms that have gone out of business is about, 5 to 10,000 nationally have gone out of business. In the same period, the numbers of small farms that have gone into business is something like 100,000. So the trend is that some of these big farms are naturally, regardless of what USDA is doing, these are just the demographics, big farms are failing, small farms are successful. And so even if we didn't have a philosophical support for local food and small farms or organic farms, that's where the market is going. That's where the growing part of in our country, big farms are failing, small farms are growing. So we want to support the small farms because that's the new thing. That's what's where people are making money.
Okay, I'm part of the group here in Anchorage that's organizing to open the food co-op here in Anchorage in accordance with the producers in the valley as a multi-stakeholders cooperative. In doing so, I've talked to a lot of the smaller growers up there because that's who we would like to focus on, is give them an opportunity to utilize the land they're not using because they don't have an outlet for the food should they be growing it there. There's a lot of them that need things like tractors and, to do more of their land and stuff like that. And they can't find the funding to repair the tractors, to buy their tractors, to, those kind of things.
Right.
So when you're talking, the USDA has its programs, how do they find out what applies to them?
Right, and that's where I was going. Okay, so in the growing part of the food system, we need to grow more food in Alaska. We need to grow more food. How can we do that? USDA has programs. What my agency, the Farm Service Agency, primarily does is provide financing. We have financing. We have financing for farmers. If you're in the business of growing something, whether it's broccoli or peonies, you will be eligible, likely, it's a loan, you'll likely be eligible for our programs. Low interest, good terms, we call it supervised credit because we are there to help you. Like, for example, farmer comes, needs some financing for a tractor or something, or to buy some additional acreage or buy fertilizer, whatever it is they need funding for. They were to go to a bank. The bank, first question would be, do you have a business plan? I see your business plan. Farmer kind of scratches his head, maybe go back. I'll come back later. If you come to us, say, I need some money for fertilizer, we will ask you the same question. Do you have a business plan? And if you say no, we'll say, okay, we'll work with you. We'll help you write the business plan. So that's what we do. We, because we're in the business of providing financing, helping grow more food.
Are you based out of like small business development up there in the valley, or where are you guys?
Our office is in Palmer. It's right across from Cars.
Okay.
It's a USDA office.
Oh, okay. So they can come to your office itself.
Office in Palmer. We also have an office in Delta. I have a small office in Anchorage. I'm in Anchorage sometimes. So yeah, it's easy to find us. We have people, that's their jobs, work with farmers to help them with business plans, help them think about how to run a business. We're on the financing, our agencies. There are other agencies that do, you know, technical stuff. If you want to learn more about how to grow and what kind of fertilizer or how to manage, there are other co-op extension, others do that. What we do is the money. So yeah, the money is there. We also have targeted programs. We have all kinds of different loan programs, but some of our loan money is a set aside for women farmers, minority farmers, beginning farmers. Sometimes the criteria for our regular loans, criteria for a loan is you have to have been in the business for like 10 years, because we don't want to give a loan to someone who's never done it before. The eligibility criteria is fairly high, but then we have these other programs called beginning farmer that we've lowered the eligibility to 1 year. So if you're a new farmer, mm-hmm. we have some set aside money just for new farmers. So yeah, we're trying to target those new small beginning farmers and help them with the money side. Yeah, help them figure out how to run a successful business financially. Mm-hmm. So we deal with that. Processing, as you say, if Alaska doesn't have a ability to process our food, then it limits the amount of food that we can produce, right? The farmer is only going to plant so much broccoli that he can sell.
His family can eat, or he can
either
sell
his family can
market.
Eat, or he can sell at the farmer's market, or he can sell at Cars or wherever he's selling the fresh product. But if we had a plant in the valley that was freezing broccoli, then that farmer would plant 10 more acres of broccoli because mm-hmm. he could sell it to the processing plant. So without the processing ability, it limits the amount of food we mm-hmm. can produce because we're only selling into the fresh market.
And I hear they just keep going back and forth on the processing plant. You know, some are saying it's way too big. Some are saying, you know, how are we going to utilize all the space? And
yeah, that's a good example. In the Mat-Su Valley, there's been a proposal to build a processing plant, and it was initiated by the Mat-Su Borough, interestingly, because they see agriculture as an economic development strategy for their borough. And they saw the same limitations. They say, well, there's only so much agriculture that we can have if we don't have a processing plant. So they said, well, we'll take the lead. And they made a request, and they got some money to do some planning, some feasibility studies. So they started, but yeah, you're right. They started, but to figure out what size, what's the right kind of processing plant, they're still in the process. And I'm very involved in that too. Want to help work with the farmers to help design a processing plant and figure out the business plan. How are you going to finance it? You're going to need some private sector financing. We can probably help you with some government financing, but mm-hmm. maybe the farmers should form a co-op. So the farmers have mm-hmm. put some money into it. Maybe there's a private sector food processing company that wants to. Anyway.
And there's a small little group, Alaska Farm and Garden Co-op. Now, they haven't officially formed, but that's the group that is joining our cooperative efforts because they are the smaller farmers up there. And we know that, you know, in order to make this what we're looking at, which is a year-round supply, open 6 days a week, we're going to need a lot of product to keep the doors open. And so in order to do that, we're looking at how we can make it beneficial, not just for the consumers here in Anchorage, but for the producers.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, this whole food system thing, it's all connected. Mm-hmm. And unless we have some processing and some distribution set up, mm-hmm. then the farmers aren't going to grow it.
Right. Because
they'll just grow it and they won't be able to sell it. And mm-hmm. that's a waste of their time. They need to understand that there'll be a market for what they grow.
Right.
So it's all connected, and it's hard to figure this out. How do you build this stronger food system without dealing with all these different pieces of it? You can't just push it at one end. You know, it's interesting, on the other, another end that I hear the farmers, I'll often ask, talk to farmers about what they think we should do to build a stronger food system. And they'll say consumer education.
Right, yep. Right.
They say Alaska Grown. That's what the Alaska Grown marketing campaign does. They say, what's with Alaskans, you know? If this was salmon, do you know any Alaskan who would go into a grocery store and buy farmed salmon? Nobody would, right? But would we go buy an Idaho potato when there's a potato grown right here in the valley? Yes.
No, I won't.
You won't. That's
not
good.
Not anymore, ever again. Nor carrots, even.
Carrots and potatoes. We grow
great carrots.
We grow the sweetest.
Pam, I don't know if she's here, but she grows great carrots.
Oh, Pam's carrots, the mm-hmm. Vanderweel, mm-hmm. the carrots. I mean, they're
without a billion chemicals.
Right. They don't grow them with chemicals. They're naturally sweeter because we have so much sunshine here. If you just taste one,
they're big and beautiful. There's nothing wrong with them.
Right, and that's what I mean. I mean, Alaskans think that way when it comes to salmon. We would never buy a farmed salmon, but we would.
What about Alaskan milk?
Milk, mm-hmm. another example, same thing. Have you tasted that milk? I mean, the Matanuska Creamery milk, not only does it taste better, just like carrots, not only does it taste better, but it is so much better for you because these are grass-fed cows. They are not corn-fed. They're not fed what they're fed in the lower 48. Just like grass-fed beef is better for you, mm-hmm. grass-fed milk is so much better for you. It's higher in antioxidants. It's just better. But it costs, if you sent your husband to the store, I was just in the store. I mean, you have all kinds of problems. One is that marketing. If you go into the cars, all their milk is in the top shelf, and then the other, like maybe Darigold, is down here. The Matanuska Creamery in the yellow jugs is at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So not only is it not placed well, but the price is higher. I mean, $3 or something for an outside milk, which, by the way, is a loss leader. They sell milk. The number one sales in a grocery store is milk. Number two is bananas. Go figure. But that's what people come into the store for, and so they sell. Those are all low price to bring people into the store so they'll buy other things. So milk is a loss leader. So they under price the price of milk. But yeah, Matanuska Creamery milk is fantastic, but it's $5 a gallon compared to $3 a gallon. Who's going to pay that price?
But the farmers are right, because it is, I mean, American consumers are accustomed to cheap food.
Yes.
We have been, I mean, our food has been subsidized. We pay less for food than anybody in the world. And other people understand, people in other countries where maybe their populations are a little bit more centralized and things don't have to travel as farther, but they're fresher and they're accustomed to paying more money for food. And you do have to educate the consumers, because then all this will happen organically. Because if it's driven by consumer desire, then the processing will come naturally, because it'll be worth it to somebody to build the processing plant. And then it'll be worth it to somebody to distribute it. But first you have to
get the community to say yes to it. And I think that one of the things that the farmers are doing that's smart is trying to get restaurants to use their product so that people experience it. You're not going to find it at McDonald's, but you're going to find it some places where you're going to see that there's fresh, locally grown food on the menu, which causes some people to go, we grow food here?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that it has to be consumer-driven. It has to be.
I agree. I mean, the same thing I was saying about salmon. You go to a restaurant. If I go to a restaurant, there's salmon on the menu. Not only will I ask, is it wild? Because I assume in Alaska, of course, it's wild. But I'll say, well, where is it from? Which, first of all, what kind? Is it king? Is it sockeye? Mm-hmm. Is it? Mm-hmm. And then even within that, I'm going to say, you know, is this Bristol Bay? Or is this Prince William Sound? Or is this a troll caught king from South? I mean, we know we're smart.
We're connoisseurs of salmon.
Yeah, we're consumers of salmon. But would we say, is this carrot? Is this a Matanuska Valley carrot? Oh, it's not? Well, if we started doing that, if consumers and restaurants started doing that, then the restaurants, and some restaurants are, and the number of the Anchorage restaurants are, matter of fact, I got an email from a restaurant owner or manager the other day saying, I'm preparing, we want more local vegetables, but we don't know how to get it. And that goes to the distribution part. It's right, there's no one doing it.
There's and one guy, right?
He's not doing it anymore.
Why not?
Right, because he didn't make enough money at it, and that's all part of, as we say, it's still not, it's chicken and egg, and it's all these pieces.
But you know, if we fed it to our kids in school, which we don't do.
And we should definitely learn from him to see, well, what, he tried it, and he failed. Why did he think he failed? How could we do it better next time? Because the restaurants want it.
Right.
The farmers are ready to sell. They want to sell to restaurants. It would help with consumers.
Many consumers want it.
The consumers want it. The restaurants understand that there's actually some competitive advantage here. I mean, I think that's what they're starting to get. They go, well, come to my restaurant. We serve local.
Which tourists like, because they're being educated at home and they understand the value of buying local food, and they go, wow, I can get local produce here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So let me mention one thing that I wanted to make sure you're aware of, that I'm involved with locally to try to pull all these pieces together. Because when I first started looking at this, I thought, yeah, you look at all these different pieces and you start pulling your hair out. You go, well, how do we deal with all these pieces at the same time? So I was looking for an opportunity to kind of bring all these, a way to find all these, you know, pull all these pieces together. And it came to me through the state division of obesity prevention. They had an opportunity to get a grant to form something called a food policy council. I said, that's a great idea. Let's form a food policy council. They got the grant. The council was formed. It's been around now. It's almost a year. And it's maybe 150 different people from all around the state in different, not only different regions, but like the food banks, the farmers, some of the processors, some of the distributors, we're trying to, transportation, banks, all these different pieces, we're trying to pull them all together and say, okay, how do we do this? How do we, what kind of, and it's called a policy council because the goal of the council is to come up with some policy recommendations, say, well, where are the gaps in our food system? And what is it that, whether it's the legislature or the governor or, as the woman over here was saying, well, USDA, what can you guys do? Where can we bring some resources from at a policy level? Or what policies need to be changed? Is there something we need to change? Or maybe we need to put more money into consumer education? Or if you're interested, I would stay tuned with the council, anyone else here who's interested in getting involved in trying to come up with some solutions. At least we have a place, Alaska Food Policy Council. It's got some support. The governor supports it. The USDA, we certainly support it. There's about to be a resolution introduced to the legislature, so the legislature can express some support for the council. So it's going to have some support, but I think it needs ideas. It needs people who have an interest in how do we solve the problem to be involved in that. Was that a question or just? Okay.
I have a question, Dan.
Okay.
My understanding that in other parts of the country, USDA has food storage facilities that are for emergency purposes. What is it going to take for us to have one in Alaska?
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that, but somebody asked earlier about storage, and I think that's true that our USDA food storage is in Portland.
A lot of good that does.
Yeah.
So, practically speaking, do we write to Begich and Murkowski and Young and say, we have to have one, we need it now? And a good place would be the Campbell Creek Campbell Tract. That's public land. They have warehousing. They just did their plan, and one of our comments from our group was, we need the facility here on the Campbell Tract.
I don't know, but one answer I would say is, this Food Policy Council, I see the storage as just one of the many issues that we're going to have to address. It's an important one, but it's part of a piece of the puzzle.
What division or department in the state is the Policy Council being managed by?
So it would be DHSS, Health and Social Services. And within that, it's the health, Division of Health. And within that, it's the Office of Obesity Prevention.
Okay, Carol Fink's.
Yeah, Carol Fink.
Okay.
Yep.
No, there's something very interesting last week regarding food storage, because I asked, this lady was looking for some locally grown oats. And she went down to Alaska Mill and Feed, and they sell oats down there, but it's sold as animal feed. And so I learned that what separates animal feed from human consumption is the ability to store it. That's the only separation. The growers that are growing the oats and the wheat and those kind of things that are being fed to the animals don't have, Seward has... grain silo, but there's nothing up in the valley for storage, and they don't have the security to put those grains, so therefore they can't sell them to the general public.
You know, there's a lot of grain that's grown in Alaska in Delta, mm-hmm. mostly barley, but they do grow oats, and they do grow barley. Most of their barley is also for animal feed, but there are some people who grow barley for human consumption. And I've talked to them about that, saying, why couldn't we grow more human grains up here,
right.
Whether it's malted barley for our beer or...
cornstarch.
Yeah, or... Yeah. Or barley for soup or whatever. We all would want to buy local barley. And pretty much what they say is, this is what most farmers will say, is we will grow anything that someone will buy.
Right.
We're not going to just grow it if no one will buy it. So they grow a little bit of barley because there's for human consumption, because there's a little bit of a market for it. If there was a bigger market, they'd grow more of it, but they grow the mm-hmm. barley for animal feed because they know they can turn it into a pellet and sell it for animal feed, so that's what they grow. They'll grow whatever they can sell.
Again, it gets to the processing stuff. You know, how do you get it from Delta and then take some wheat and grind it up into flour so that the average person can then use it? Because not everybody's going to go buy a $100 grain mill and have it sitting on their counter.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And it does go back to what we were saying about consumers that if we did have more demand, if more and more people said they wanted it and... Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a vicious cycle that could go down, it could go up. But I think the potential for going up is that one of the reasons, you know, your husband buys the other potatoes is because they're cheaper. And it is true that it costs more to produce up here. Everything costs more. Mm-hmm. And so our most of our food that's produced here does cost more. But I do think that eventually, if consumers were willing to pay higher price, then there was more volume. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Then farmers would have a higher volume, their prices would come down, and then the prices to consumers.
It is more competitive than it was just 5 years ago. The prices are. It's not as big a difference.
I think that's right.
You know?
And one thing, the woman in the back there was asking about USDA and programs. We do have a program. Last year was the first year we had it, that only applies to Alaska and Hawaii, that helps producers with their transportation costs. It recognizes that everything costs more up here, and so we will pay a rebate to farmers who can show us receipts of their transportation costs, and we will pay 25% of their transportation costs. So if it's fertilizer or anything that you had to ship up here, if you show us your shipping bill, we're going to pay 25% of that. And this last year was the first year we did that. That's one way that we can use, in a sense, a USDA subsidy. Some people don't like the word subsidy, but this is a subsidy that is going to help Alaskan producers lower their cost of production, which could result in lower cost to consumers, or at least it's going to help them stay in business if they have lower costs. So we're working on it. Let me get this guy in the back.
Do you guys have, like, the USDA, does it have, like, a main goal right now, or is it kind of just, like, all these pointers?
That's a good question. What I've been talking about here today, the way I think about, you know, I'm not all the USDA. Like I said, it's a huge agency. And even within, it's a huge department. Within the department, there's 17 different agencies. My agency is the Farm Service Agency. And I do think about what is the goal for the Alaska Farm Service Agency. And my goal, I'm not sure how I could articulate it, but it is to have a stronger local food system in Alaska, to produce more food here. I would like to see that number. If we say Alaskans consume 5% of the food we eat is produced here, I'd like to see that number go to 10% or so. I mean, if I could articulate a goal, it would be something like that. My agency in the USDA agency, the Farm Service, how can I help produce more food here? And make it not only produce more, but make it more affordable and make it more accessible, because it's not even, you know, I don't want the local food movement to be this sort of elite. Like, okay, yeah, we're going to produce more food, but the carrots cost $5 a pound. Who's going to buy Alaska carrots? No, you know, we're actually, one of the things we're working on with the Food Policy Council right now is to get food stamps. You can use your food stamps at farmers markets. You are allowed to do that, but there are no food stamps. They use a swipe card, and that means they have to have a card reader at the farmers markets, and there are no farmers markets in Alaska who have card readers. We're going to subsidize the purchase of card readers at two markets right now. They're going to have them at the Spinard Market and at, I think, the Homer Market. We just picked two. So we had a little bit of money. We're buying their card readers. So if you have food stamps, you can go and buy good, healthy Alaskan food at a farmer's market. But even that, I don't think, is enough, because even if you're on food stamps, maybe you can buy something at the farmer's market, but they still might be too expensive. You'd rather buy something else. So I went to a foundation and see if they would participate in a program, and they're doing this around the country, where you double your money for food stamps. You say your food stamp dollar is $2 at a farmer's market.
Mm.
So we can help low-income people also have access and afford local food. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah. This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Danny Constantin, State of Alaska Executive Director for the USDA's Farm Service Agency. His talk, entitled How to Strengthen Alaska's Local Food Systems, was recorded at the Alaska Botanical Garden 5th Annual Spring Garden Conference on March 12th. Presentations from the Alaska Botanical Garden Conference continue for the next 2 weeks on Addressing Alaskans. Make sure to tune in next week for garden writer Jeff Lowenfeld's talk entitled Teeming with Microbes. That's next week on Addressing Alaskans, Thursday at 2 p.m., repeating at 7 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.